Hi, Steve. Yeah, it's I've missed our visits up there, and being able to hang out and talk about a lot of different subjects. So yeah, it's a pleasure to be on with you.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because we'll text a lot or email a lot during the course of the year, but it doesn't replace sitting down, going to a place, having some lunch, and solving a lot of problems.
oh, there are few left unsolved, and we never even got to COVID. I haven't seen you, so we could solve that too. So haven't been around. Oh, what a mess! What a mess! But anyway, it's great to hear from you.
It's great to hear from you. Obviously, the passing of Dick Allen, known in the early years as Richie Allen, it hit a lot of people, obviously, because now at that point when Richie was with the Phillies, you would have been probably in college at that time in the beginning when he was the Rookie of the Year, right?
Yeah, I was actually at the end of high school, beginning my first years at Penn State in 1966. Was my first fall up there at University Park. So, yeah, I covered high school and college with him, and he was one of my idols. I just loved the guy. My buddies and I, we talk about it all the time. We still do that. You know, he's one of those guys. He had another at bat. You're not kidding. You waited because he might just hit one end of the night at Connie Mack Stadium. Because in those days, you know, you had a ballpark where you could actually hit it out of the whole place, over the roof, and into the night. And he was just so different, so exciting to watch. There's so many things that he could do, and I was lucky enough to get to know him really, really well. When he came and played for those couple of years in the 70s, and then when he worked for the club, and I'd see him at all these different things, and we'd sit and talk. And oh, Steve, he had a photographic memory. I bring up situations that I remember in the 60s when I watched him play, and he could tell you the count and who the pitcher was and all those kind of things. He's a joy. He's very misunderstood. One of the reasons why he's not in the Hall of Fame, which is a joke and another thing we can talk about, but just a great, great guy, and he's been in failing health the last couple of years, and unfortunately we lost him yesterday in Wampum, out there a little bit north of Pittsburgh where he grew up.
Yeah, exactly, and so he gets there, and it was an interesting time in the 60s in Philadelphia, and he struggled with that. And that brought about the misperception of the kind of guy he really was, as opposed to what he was perceived as being. When you had a chance to talk to him about that, how much did that hurt? Because you're talking about an intelligent guy here that was a very sensitive person that people didn't realize.
It hurt him a lot because he never had any problems anywhere else. And, you know, the 60s are different. You know, I'm a little older than you, but you've read enough and know enough about what it was like with the racial tensions in the 60s. It was awful. And one of the worst things that probably could have happened was the Phillies sent him as an 18-year-old kid from Wampum, Pennsylvania, where everything was fine, to Little Rock, Arkansas. I mean, you talk about a powder keg right there. So that's what he dealt with. And then he came to the Phillies. And everything was okay, but we had a player named Frank Thomas who, in 1964, when the Phillies blew that thing, they had like 9 first basemen. That's one of those great trivia questions. You love that stuff. That's one of those great trivia. Name the 9 first basemen that played for the Phillies in 64. Well, Frank Thomas was one of them and did a really good job. Well, the next year, and I've had guys tell me this flat out, Bobby Wine and Cookie Rojas and Tony Taylor and guys I talked to over the years, Frank Thomas was a jerk. And he was one of those guys that used to give him the, hey, boy, come here, bring me this, bring me that. Well, one day Richie had enough of him, and he smoked him at the batting cage. Well, that he lost that battle in Philadelphia at that time. You know, people sided with Frank Thomas, and Frank Thomas was released right after that. And from that day on, it was never the same. They'd throw stuff at him. He started to wear the batting helmet and all those kind of things, and it went downhill. Not that his career did, because he still had good years, but it went downhill as far as the people rooting for him and liking him that much in Philadelphia. So he never had any problems, Steve, when he went anywhere else. Never.
Yeah.
You never hear players talk about him or anything, anything bad about him. Great guy.
White Sox players loved him. Cardinals players loved him. Dodgers players loved him. I mean, all the way through. When you finally got to know him, what surprised you about him?
Well, the thing I just mentioned was one of them, how he could remember stuff. You know, I've always, you know, I know you do. I listen, you know, we've been friends for so many long, and I'm not blowing smoke at you, but you remember things. People have told me how I remember things. You know, that's nothing. You're just lucky. I mean, it's just, you know, we're lucky.
That's
it's
right.
One of those things that you have that gift or you don't. Well, he had that. The other thing that... Well, you shake hands with him. You'll never forget it when you shake hands with him because, you know, his hand would go up to my elbow, it felt like, when you'd shake hands with him. He had these massive paws on him. Just if people look at pictures of him holding a bat, that 40-ounce bat, see how big his hands were. But I'll tell you what, how gentle his voice was, and he loved to laugh. He kind of giggled when you'd make him laugh or bring up something from the old days or something that was happening. That's Renee's coming home, so Sammy is getting very excited about that. That's just one. Just what a gentle guy he was. And you know what else he would do? He'd always ask about you. How you doing? How's your family?
Yeah.
What's going? I would always go to him, Richard, Anthony Allen, and he'd come up and give you the big hug and say, "Will's my man." You know, those kind of things. So he's just a very nice, caring, warm human being, and he'll definitely be missed.
I want to get to the Hall of Fame part. Now, this is something, you know, I have great respect for the writers, so, you know, this has nothing to do with the writers, but I've always found it interesting that a Chris Wheeler, 37 years, seen everybody, is not allowed to have one. Vin Scully saw everything, not allowed to have a vote. All right, so forth. Okay. And I understand the Baseball Writers Association, Mayor. I understand that, and great respect. But there's several guys that aren't in where I sit back and say, "You got to be kidding me! Really, this is a dominant player." And to me, that to me is a Hall of Famer. When Richie Allen / Dick Allen played, everywhere he went, he was a dominant player.
Yes. Well, you know, you go back and. And, you know, like Bill James, who became the guru of the stats back in those days, berated him that he was a negative influence. He wasn't a negative influence. Bill James probably didn't spend 2 minutes around him. And you never heard a teammate say anything like that around him. Even a lot of the media guys that were around him, he could get a little surly, but there were reasons why he was like that early on in his career because we just went through that. But I think a lot of it had to do with the fact that he somehow got this reputation that he was a disruptive influence on a baseball team. Nothing could be further than the truth that he was disruptive. He was a team guy. His teammates liked him. To this day, when they would talk about him, they loved the guy, and they'd start laughing. You know, they'd raise their eyebrows and say, "Oh, he was different in a lot of ways. You know, he marched to his own drummer." But, Steve, I think that's what really is the reason why he didn't get in the Hall of Fame in those 15 years when you're allowed, you know, when you're eligible. And then for, you know, in 2014 or whatever it was when they had that Veterans Committee joke thing where he needed 12 votes out of 16, he got 11. Come on. And now it was going to take until 2020 to do it again, and now it was postponed another year because of the COVID stuff, and now he passes away and he can't. But he's going to get in. When they finally started running all these numbers, comparing his WAR and all these other crazy things you hear about nowadays, and his slugging percentage and all, he's like 1-2 with Hank Aaron in almost all these categories. Come on, you're mentioned with Hank Aaron, and you're not in the Hall of Fame. Enough, you know, it's just really silly.
And, well, here's the silly part for me. If you can sit back while a person is alive and say they're Hall of Fame worthy, give them the honor while they're alive.
Right.
Where they can have the moment and appreciate it and so forth. And I think the last thing you should judge is you sit there and say, "Well, gee, when I interviewed him, I didn't like him." Okay, well, what is that? What does that have to do with driving and runs?
Yep. Well, the irony is the election that was supposed to be on Sunday, and it would have been announced Monday if it hadn't been postponed for another year, and he passed away on Monday. So the incredible irony of that have been if, in fact, he had been selected and he may have never known, or maybe he would have known. I don't know. I don't know his final days or, you know, what he was going through at that time. I'm not privileged to that. But
right.
Yeah, it's just so silly that, you know, he'd go off his reputation and from the media. Give me a break. You know, talk to the people that play. Look at all these guys that have come out and been in his corner to be in the Hall of Fame. And what a horrible year we've had in baseball for losing great people.
Yeah, boy, isn't it?
Brock and Gibson and Seaver and Whitey Ford and all these people are just – and now Dick Allen. It's really been a horrible year for that.
Yeah, it has been, no question. Look, I hope he gets there for the sake of his family. It just would have been nice if he made it where he could sit back and say, you know what, all right.
Yeah.
Here's your chance now. I'm going to flip this around, all right? Since we didn't. Okay. So go ahead, because I know you're aching to ask a few questions, so we'll flip this around and have a little fun.
Yeah. Wheels from Bluebell will be the caller right now.
This is how he signs his emails to me, by the way. So,
obviously it's look, I spent my whole life in the business, and I know there's always two sides to everything, and the stuff that goes on behind the scenes. So, there's been a lot pushing against the program this year, it sounds like. Not only the injuries, a lot of other things. Is that pretty accurate?
Oh, yeah. No, this has been for the players and everybody. I mean, they've worked hard and they've been diligent about doing everything they can to keep the numbers down. So a lot of them barely get to the store if they go out. They haven't been able to see their families. So even when the families go to the games, it's wave at them. You know, senior day is a good example. You know, they can't have their families on the field. They had to forego Thanksgiving. Okay, say things fall into place for them. It's not out of the realm of possibility to go to a bowl game. They'd have to forego Christmas with their families. They can't be around them. They've had one guy lose a brother along the way. Others have been affected by COVID. Noah Cain had four family members, for example, because Noah's been open about it, so I can talk about it. He's had four family members affected by it along the way. So that's just one example. James has been greatly affected by not having Fumi and his two daughters there. You know, and it's going to be a wild... You know, I was talking to James about this last Wednesday, Wheels. And I was talking to him. He got all choked up talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't think people realize that the toll... this has, and it's, and you and I both know this, okay? This, I remember years ago somebody asked me this question, and as soon as I say this, you're going to jump all over it, I know. What surprised me about the job that I didn't expect, and what surprised me is actually how little people on the outside do know.
Yep. And that's you and I have discussed that too, and that's not trying to take some holier-than-thou attitude.
No.
It's true. It's the first thing you find out when you're around it, when you're lucky enough to be on the inside the way you are, the way I was for so many years, is how little you really, really, really knew about the game itself, let alone all the things, all the problems. Charlie Manuel and I used to have a thing. And his office would be in one spot, and about 30 yards away, maybe 20 yards away, was the coach's room where his coaches were. Very good baseball people. And I remember saying to him one day, it's a long walk between that room where we are right now and that coach's room, and what you go through in this room and what they have to go through out there. And we looked at each other and said, boy, that really sums it up, because there's so many things that are taken care of that nobody knows about, and things that are so tough. And when I heard people starting to say, well, maybe they ought to make a change with James Franklin, are you kidding me with what man has done for our program and what he's been able to do and still will do and just because of this crazy, crazy year they're having right now? That's just ridiculous. Well, but I went through that for years with managers and things like that. And everybody's allowed to have an opinion, but that to me was crazy.
Yeah, no, and when Wheels and I say that, you know, it's how little people do know, that's not belittling the audience in any way, shape, or form. It doesn't belittle any fan. It's just when you have that kind of access, you see things And now certain things that are happening make a lot more sense as to why, because you know exponentially more. You know, the people will assume somebody's in a doghouse, and it turns out the guy's hurt. They'll assume that somebody else got in trouble for this and know it was something else that happened. And you end up knowing all those little things that add up. And just like you, if you and I would go to an insurance office and we'd have assumptions about the insurance office, and all of a sudden they'd look at us and say, no, that's not how it works here. It's the same thing.
Right. Well, one of my best examples, and you probably go through it too, I don't know how much time you get to spend with Coach off the air when you do that show, but I got so close to the managers over the years when I would do that radio show, and they trust you. And they're going to tell you things off the record to lead you in the right direction all the time. And then when you turn the machine on, you know, for the fan's sake, you have to ask them what needs. Look, there's a second guessing going on from a play tonight, but you got to ask them that. You get that out of the way. But they give you things. Now, when things go on during the game, you're able to cover those kind of things and talk about them or not get into them.
That's right.
Because you know what's going on. Like, suppose somebody's not available out of the bullpen that night. Well, you know everybody's screaming, why aren't they using this thing? And so sometimes you may just have to say on the air, well, you know, the guy may be unavailable tonight or something we're not aware of. And those are the kind of things that, you know, I know you go through and you've learned, but I'm sure Joe had great trust in you, too, and I'm sure James does, too, and you have to earn that.
Right. No, exactly. I mean, Joe, Bill, and James were constantly on deep background. If I had a question about something I saw or didn't see, or they wanted to volunteer it, they'd say it because they knew it would go no further, but at least I knew what the reason was, you know, about something. And, you know, but then when the machine goes on, let's take, like, the question about the bullpen, all right? There's a way to ask a question. Right, Brad. Let's just take Brad Lidge. Okay, hey, Brad Lidge didn't get into last night's game. What was some of your reasoning behind that? Now it opens the door for them to answer the question, but you've asked it in such a way where you're asking the question and not questioning them.
So true, and I always, I mean, you know, you're not 100%, but almost 100% of the time, I would make sure I got there, and we would sit and BS before that machine ever went on. And if I had some area that I wanted to get into, you know, I would probe them a little bit and say, look, we're going to give me an idea, and then we could handle it. And people could never say, well, you know, he wouldn't ask. He's a homer. He wouldn't ask him about what happened last night, because you knew you had to cover that stuff.
Right, yeah, you knew that. And usually I talk to these sometimes 10, 15 minutes. I mean, so there's some days they just as human beings, they want to talk. They need a sounding board to talk to listen, because there's something they want to get off their chest, and it's not about you, it's about something.
Charlie Manuel used to always say, you know, Wheels, I really need you. I need to vent every day. You turn out to be my shrink. You're saving me a lot of money from laying on some guy's couch talking to him. He used to say that. That's my bad Charlie Manuel impression. He used to say that to me, and I used to laugh. Fergoso used to say the same thing. You know, he would just... he'd be mad at Lee Thomas about something. I can't tell him all this stuff, but I just got to get this off my chest. And, you know, we sit there and listen, and then we do the show. And, you know, that's all part of it. You know, the great part about it is they trust you that much that they know that you're not going to take it anywhere else.
Right, exactly. You got enough. Get out of here.
Yeah. Well, that's what they would see. You know, Fregosi would look at me after a while with those nasty eyes of his, looking over his little glasses, and he'd go, what the hell are you still doing here? I didn't know. I said, well, you wanted to talk about something? Nah, we'll do it tomorrow. So, but, they really need people like that in their lives, I think, that they can just
sit
and... And the other thing is, and you can hear it when the coaches talk to you, and I was lucky enough with the managers, they respect your knowledge of the game, that you're not going to ask a lot of dumb stuff. And try to put them in situations that... that are really hard to handle at that point, and they appreciate that. And as far as Penn State goes, we're going to beat Michigan State on Saturday, and then what happens after that with this crossover stuff? Where's that going?
find out on Sunday, and it's really a wild card in a lot of ways, Wheels, because there's a lot of movement right now, and I believe this should happen. For example, Wisconsin and Minnesota played for 113 straight years. Well, their game got canceled. Well, to me, if they're available to play this wild card game, let them play. So that's not a crossover game. So I think it would then jumble some matchups. But I think they should do something like that to keep something like that going.
That's a great point. Yeah, And listen, where are they going to play them, Steve? Are they going to be playing like a normal game? Some team would be at home, like Penn State would have a home game, as cold as it might be, and all that.
We have been sitting and waiting and wondering. Welcome to 2020 in the Big Ten.
because they all can't play in the same stadium. They all can't go to Indianapolis to play, obviously. I wondered about that, whether they would look for, what Detroit has, a dome stadium out in the Midwest and some of the other ones. But it's one of those things that curious people are asking right now.
And it's a great question, and I can tell you the person you're asking it to right now is circling a fogged in airport and isn't sure where the plane's going to land. So,
hey, you be like me. You just get on and put the seatbelt on.
I put the headset on. They point me toward the field or court. I talk. Just tell me where it is.
and you know what? One thing you and I are both talking about this business. You're still in. I was lucky enough to be in. We both love it. It's a little harder. It's a little harder when you're having a bad year. But you learn more about yourself and how you're able to handle it than you're having a bad year than when you're having a good year. Because anybody can do it. But it's a lot easier to do a good year.
Yeah, it sure is. Hey, it's always great. Hey, happy holidays to you, my friend. Thanks so much. Let's stay in touch, okay?
Yeah, well, I'll keep bugging you once in a while to find out what's going on.
I try not to
bug you too much, but every once in a while I got to find out.
You're the best. Anytime.
Great talking to you. And I hopefully we'll get together and we can see each other in person again soon. I miss that.
I can't wait, Wills. You're the best.
Okay, Steve. You take care. Great talking to you.